Again, I'm Rick, and I'm a compulsive overeater or eater. It says, we've got it both ways. Couple things. One is, just as we were starting, a whole series of jet skis just hit behind me, and it's really noisy, which is why I put these in the first place. So I hope you don't get too much background noise. Now, I love Overeaters Anonymous. I do. I wasn't capable of loving anything except a woman or my children before I came to the 12-step programs, and in particular Overeaters Anonymous. And I get to say today that I feel love in my heart, something I really wasn't capable of before. So I know that's what it's like now, but I always, it's just what I feel. I just want you to know that. The other thing is, I want to start with just a little story from today, which I think is a fun one. So this morning, late in the morning, I went to a live meeting. And we have some new live meetings that we've started up here, and it's kind of nice. And this meeting starts with a 5-minute guided meditation. Somebody pulls up a guided meditation, and we do it. And I was listening to the guided meditation, going along with it, and it said, "And now let's set an intention for the day." And it was talking about feeling good about our bodies, feeling good about something. And it said, to have an intention for the today, pick something that really makes you feel good so that you can put it in your mind for the day, And I have to tell you, instantly, without a thought, without a what do I do? This meeting just popped into my head. Something that makes you feel good. And the truth is, it does. And the other truth is that anytime somebody says, "Hey, will you speak? Hey, will you program this convention? Hey, will you host this or that?" I always say, I mean, inside I go like, "Oh no, please, I don't want to do this." But outside, what comes out of my mouth is, "Yes, it would be my pleasure." This is our responsibility as members of Overeaters Anonymous. And I've learned that it's in self-forgetting we find. That's St. Francis prayer. So I always say yes. And the truth of the matter is, I thought about the meeting a couple times during the day. I'm like, "Oh, what am I going to talk about? Oh my God, haven't they all heard me before? This is going to be terrible. It's whatever." And I was a little bit, I set up beforehand. But the truth is that this keeps me active in the program. So this will end up being a day where I started the day in prayer and meditation. Then I moved to a meeting. After the meeting, a bunch of us got together and had a healthy lunch, an abstinent lunch, and did further fellowship with each other. And after that, I came here, and I'm kind of feeling like this book ends my day, enveloped in 12 steps, enveloped in the fellowship, enveloped in the process of Overeaters Anonymous, living this lifestyle. And it's not always easy, and it's and you know, and it doesn't work all. I mean, I'm not always happy. But what a wonderful thing. Thank you. So thank you, Martine, for asking me to come here. You made my day something special for me. You made my day one where I feel good about life and less likely to act out on my eating disorder. Less likely, So we said that. So let's go back a little bit. I don't like to tell a lot about my story. Because I love the solution so much, and I love to talk about spiritual things, and I love to talk about what this program has done for me. But I had to come from someplace. And when I first came in as a kid, I was not a big. I call it a big, overweight, whatever it is, it doesn't make a difference. I was actually a skinny kid. I was a hyperactive skinny kid. But when it came to sugar, man. They didn't make an amount that I couldn't consume, And the truth is that as a young kid who was ADHD, I wasn't an organized kid. I was like all over the place. But yet, when it came to Halloween, I would divide our little city into a grid, and I would not use paper bags, but I would get pillowcases because I knew they'd hold up and I could get more candy, And I that's the way I was with things, that I liked. The truth is that really what I am is a binger in all my fellowships. And I'm in multiple fellowships. I'm not here to talk about them today. I'm here to talk about this one. But I'm a binger. I think I've shared this maybe at another meeting here. You know, they've got that dog song, Bingo. You know, Bingo. If it was about me, it would be "And Binjo is his name, oh." Because if you can binge on it, I'm capable of binging on it. It didn't make a difference. And all of my disorders progressed equally. So I didn't start out, you know, I have a progressive illness. So they were all, so I'm not like one of those people who went to AA and I was skinny. And then I say to people, "Oh my God, I forgot. I lost one addiction and I went right to another one. I started to overeat." I kind of told myself that in the beginning, but it wasn't really true. It wasn't true whatsoever. All of my addictions developed equally. Things that I used to be able to do in terms of food, I stopped being able to do. And I'm talking about control because it was the control I could exercise earlier that I couldn't exercise later. Things like my kids like root beer floats. And I would buy some ice cream and root beer. And I'd make them root beer floats and I'd have one. And then I'd put it away, you know, and it was gone. I didn't even think about it, except that down the road somewhere, I had them for the weekend because I was divorced. And I started with the floats for them. And then I took them home. And then I came back and I finished it. And then I went out and I bought more. And I kept doing it until I was either out cold from a sugar coma, pretty much, you know, or wow. So I was a skinny kid. I was a skinny kid in ADHD, not necessarily diagnosed, but I know it now. I know it now. And my overeating developed over time. And really, not until my 30s did I start to like gain enough weight that I was overweight, you know. But I got overweight, and what do I do? Diet, of course. So I was always an athletic guy, and I always understood nutrition and exercise. And you know, you burn more calories than you consume, everything's going to be fine. And so I would diet, and I'd lose the weight. It worked. My diets always worked. You know, I knew how to work the diets, but they worked until they didn't work anymore. And then I ate more, and then my weight would go up even higher. I was a yo-yo dieter and weight gainer. And I did that over a period of time, going from 180 pounds, 185 actually, 185 pounds, up to 275 to 280 pounds, you know? So I was at a point where I'm a thin guy. I'm a tall, thin guy, you know. So when I put on close to 100 pounds, it didn't sit well with me. It was busting out of my face. I looked like prosthetics from a movie. If you saw Bill Maher on Friday Night, where they had Jiminy Glick, you know, his face was like, they had this huge face on it. That's what I looked like. My face was in there somewhere. I couldn't tie my shoes. It would take two or three shots because I would run out of breath because it would cut off my diaphragm, you know? And I was terrible. I was just terrible. But I didn't want to consider that there was any problem. You know, I didn't want to accept it. And I had accepted that I had other problems, but I accepted those because I needed a defense against some legal issues that I had. So I went into a professional support group. As an alcoholic, really, or as everything. And you know, when I went in a professional support group, I met with them. And they said, "Tell us what your problem is." You know, I'm sitting there, I'm like 275 pounds. I can't even breathe. You know, I smoke cigarettes. So, like, my breathing was like, I mean, it was just, I really, really. And they didn't say, "You know, Rick, it looks like you've got a weight problem." You know, they said, "Tell me about your drinking. Tell me about your drugging. That's something we can help you with because the Florida Supreme Court and the Florida Bar are trying to take away your license. We can help you with that." I said, "But you know, it just food wasn't." I discussed food with them later on, The eating disorder. They acknowledged the eating disorder. They acknowledged it from a medical point of view. But they said, do you really think that we're going to go to a bar association or a Supreme Court and say that this guy screwed up and he's got these complaints against him because he eats too much? No. Society doesn't understand us so much. Sometimes we don't even understand each other. How can we expect society to understand us? However, time came, I said, oh my God, I have to do something about this. I went to a meeting, one meeting. In that one meeting I went to, I didn't come back for a year because I heard some people who were really, really overweight talking about spending $350 for food, going someplace and eating all the food until they had to be hospitalized. And I said, this isn't me. I wasn't ready. I didn't identify. This isn't me. So I left for a year. And then I was diagnosed as a diabetic, and the doctor said you need to start insulin. And I said I don't want to Let's try the pills. And he said, well, okay, we'll try it. Come back in a month. You're going to need to go on insulin anyway. So I did it for a month, and I lost the weight, and I did great because I was really good at dieting and I was really good at nutrition. I understood those things, and the doctor said this is amazing. He called in some of his staff to say, look how great he's doing, And I left there, and then that weekend I was going to an AA meeting, and I went to the meeting, and afterwards we went out to breakfast, and I told everybody, "You guys can order what you want, but me, I'm going to have a little oatmeal, a little fresh fruit. That's it, and because I just have to." And we went there, and we sat down at the table of this restaurant, and I ordered everything on the menu. I ordered breakfast. I ordered them all. I ordered some huge moldy meat omelet with extra this and rashers of bacon and the Cuban pan toast with the butters. I ate it all. And then it's like right out of the big book. I sat there afterwards and I said, oh my God, knowledge didn't work. How about that? It's just what it said in the big book. Knowledge doesn't work. So I'm trying to see the time. Okay, good. So knowledge didn't work. And one of the guys at the table I had heard had been to one of those meetings. And I said, you know where there's a meeting, And he said, at the hospital right up the road, there's a hospital meeting that starts in like 15 minutes. No kidding. And I went there and I walked into the room and I was home. I felt completely differently than I did the first time. I identified I was home. I felt that I was surrounded by people who understood me, and that there was someplace where I could get something. And by the way, today, after that meeting, we all went, some of us, so six or seven of us, went out for breakfast. The person sitting next to me was at her first meeting, and she said, I was in that meeting and I felt like I was home. I had heard that before. And I just turned to her and I said, welcome home. Isn't that what we say? Isn't that in our materials? And we usually say it at the end of meetings. You're not alone. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home. And that's where I am right now. I'm home. I'm surrounded by a group of people who understand me better than my friends and my family. And all my acquaintances, all the people who know me. And not only that, but I'm in a room where I have a feeling like I understand you. I understand you. I spent the best part of my life as a professional looking at people, telling them what was the deal, pointing the finger. And after I would tell them what's happening, and I would say, like, do you understand? You understand? I was always trying to tell people, do you understand? And then when they would respond and speak, what happens? I would just wait. I would be waiting for them to finish so I could continue telling them what the deal was, Today, I like to think that I listen. And just like it says in the St. Francis prayer, better that I understand, may I understand rather than be understood. Sometimes the best thing I get in those situations where somebody talks about their problems and I just feel like I've got answers in my head to tell them.
Gentle reminder, 5 minutes.
Thank you. Great. But sometimes the best thing I can do is just sit with somebody. They just want to be with somebody. Don't tell people what to do. Maybe they can sense, the serenity in me. Maybe they can sense something. Maybe they just need somebody who really cares or understands and that they have that feeling. What a wonderful thing that is that we do for each other. This is a story I've got to tell it. It exemplifies really what we have. What we have. 2 years ago, I told this story this morning. 2 years ago, I was a delegate at the World Service Business Conference, and it's 250 people. It's a real serious room, big screens, all kinds of technical stuff. It's serious. It's serious. And there's a pro and a con platform with big microphones that just step up this talk about pro and con. Well, they started every session with the Serenity Prayer. I think I might have told this story in here. And if I did, it's worth telling again. So they called the first session, and two people walked up to the platform. And it was two women, and one of them was from Russia, and the other was from the Ukraine. And they held hands, And the first one said the Serenity Prayer in Russian. The second one said the Serenity Prayer in Ukrainian. And then we all said the Serenity Prayer in English together. And I swear to you, I would be willing to bet money that there wasn't a dry eye in that room. And we all knew that what we can accomplish here together, they can't do out there. They can't do it out there, but we do it here. We do it here. And I think we feel like this opportunity, we're also compelled, listen, I mean, how I feel about it is I have a disease that wants to kill me. It wants to kill me. There's no doubt about that. I have a disease that wants to kill me, and I'm provided with a solution to help me combat it. And the biggest part of that solution I haven't mentioned here is having a higher power, is having a God of my understanding, is going to that God and not taking credit for it. The worst thing I can do is say, yeah, I did great. Didn't I? People come up to me and go, hey, Rick, that was good. And I go, yeah, did good, didn't I? No, I didn't do good. I didn't do good. I have to go constantly. I have to look at my internal dialogue all the time. It's something that somebody gave me. They said, if you want to see where you are, look at your internal dialogue. If your internal dialogue is thinking about a conversation that you had with somebody yesterday or something that happened yesterday, you're in the disease. You can't change that. There's no energy there. If you're thinking about the future and you're worried and you're talking to people in the future, you're in the disease. In the disease. But if your internal dialogue is with God, if you're in the present moment, the here and the now, the sacred now, I like to talk about the sacred now, that exact point in time where every second is irreplaceable, every heartbeat is irreversible, every sacred now is an opportunity that once gone will never be here again. So I try to treat my days as sacred nows. I try to treat my days as something that requires that I stay in the present because it's the only place where I have access to a power that can change my life and make it better. And I love doing that. I'm out of time. I can't see. I know. Watch this. Oh, okay. I have a minute. I mean, isn't this petty? Isn't this petty? If I did this, I would have a much clearer look at everybody right now. But the truth of the matter is that I don't want to wear glasses. I don't want to wear glasses. I don't want to look like I have to wear glasses. But if I wear glasses, it's better. I have access to these tools. I have access to this solution. I have access to you guys. It's so worth working it. It's so worth living it. My life has gone from being restless, irritable, and discontented, like it says in the doctor's opinion, being under the influence of anxiety, depression, anger, fear, worry, to a place now, the other end of it, that we are told that it's a mandate from God. Surely God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free, to know serenity, to know peace, to know each other, to know about love, to be able to have love and not anger.